Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions. I am the ever snarky Sasha Kaplan, and joined by the fabulous and well-decorated background that is the mighty and equally snarky Caitlin Moore.
I'm glad to be back, folks.
So we are continuing our Spidey month that turned into like a bi-weekly thing because one of us had to move and one of us was in Philadelphia.
You know what happens when mom calls? You have to be there.
That's right. So with that, we're going to continue Spidey month by talking about Spider-Man 2, heralded by some as the best of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man trilogy. But we will be the judges of that, because that is the point of the show. We are judging movies incessantly, whether you like it or not.
So, yep. So I guess my first question for you is, did we just watch the same movie?
Yeah, so it's funny, because as I'm watching this, I'm like, is this kind of basically, structurally, it's very similar to the first Spider-Man movie. Peter... with slight variations, right? Peter has powers, Peter loses powers, Peter gets powers back. Peter gets the great power and great responsibility gist. We have a villain that is a good guy that gets transformed into a bad guy that is not entirely within his control, who then dies based off of his own decisions, essentially. The difference is Gobby's was malicious and Otto's was noble at the end because he sacrifices himself to save New York, question mark. And then you have the Mary Jane nonsense.
Yeah, this movie also features another love triangle, this time with J. Jonah's son, who is an astronaut. So he shows up like 3 times in this movie. He plays no significant role. I don't know, remember what his name is.
John Jameson. You had to look it up.
Okay, but he's there too. So, and once again, this movie also features Peter Parker getting bullied all the time. His life is just sad.
Well, bullied, I think, is the wrong word here. Whereas, like, in the first movie, he's actually actively being bullied. We meet Flash Thompson, blah, 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 because Mary Jane has terrible taste in men. She has really terrible taste in men.
Peter not included.
Honestly, Peter kind of included, because look, she dates Flash Thompson, which we can chuck to teenage stupidity. Then she dates Harry, which, like, okay, fine, on par with the comics, who is not that great to her and does not defend her. Then she dates John Jameson, who by all accounts is actually a decent human being, but because his whole thing is I'm a handsome astronaut, he has zero personality in this movie. And then Peter Flaky McGee over here, Parker. And then I just realized, I read the summary, not to jump too far ahead, but I read the summary of the third movie, and it still also follows basically the same story. Bad guy dies. Oh, I forgot the most important part that all three of these movies have in common. Mary Jane getting kidnapped.
At least twice. Oh.
She also gets kidnapped in the last movie.
So, guys, did we just watch the last movie?
I mean, there are some variations. To go back to your earlier point, right? We were talking about bullying. So Peter gets bullied because he's a nerd. Here, life just the universe is really out to get Peter. He loses his job. He can't pay his rent. On top of that, the Aunt May's house is being foreclosed on. He owes Betty money, Betty Brant, because she gave him an advance on a paycheck for photos. Like, and his grades are in the toilet, and Dr. Connors doesn't hate him, but is like, what the heck, Peter? I have a dumb question, though.
Yes.
We know that Peter was really, really smart, right? And he's from, you know, he's being raised by his single guardians who are clearly not have a lot of income by any means. So that means Peter qualified at least for a full ride to, I'm going to guess, Empire State University, probably Columbia level, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't get a housing stipend or scholarship or like a work study thing?
I chuckled him up to not filling out paperwork.
Because like the first year, I can understand he didn't need it because he was living with Harry. But for his, because it's been like a year since the events of the first Spider-Man movie.
I think they mentioned it's 2 years at some point, that it was 2 years since Uncle Ben had died. Yeah. So because of that, I feel like the timeline of this movie's a little bit wonky. So it's hard to determine just how much time has passed since the first movie, because again, we just get that time frame of Ben Parker dying 2 years previously, which means that Peter's been struggling in this for a while, because I assume that Harry just kicked him out of the apartment when he became CEO of Oscorp.
I actually have an explanation for that. It was in the IMDb trivia somewhere. Where is it? Under spoilers. In the script, Peter rents an above apartment. It's giving me Soviet nightmares. above a TV repair shop. He doesn't live with Harry anymore since Norman's death, and Harry moved back into his father's townhouse. Harry's obsession with Spider-Man was too much for Peter to bear. This is the reason why he gets annoyed with Harry at his birthday party.
Because, you know, that movie explained that so well.
Honestly, we do get hints of it. At the birthday party and at the society party thingy for Jay Jr. here, there are hints of the fact that, like, Peter can't stand the fact that Harry's obsessed with Spider-Man. So it does, they don't blatantly state it, but they sort of subtly imply it. And once I read this bit about the script, it sort of starts to make a little bit more sense.
Well, I'm glad we can get all of our answers in movie trivia. So, but it also leads to my next question. How many of these problems would have been solved if they just asked Harry for money?
Probably all of them, actually. Granted, Peter's not going to ask Harry for money. And granted, here's the problem. Aunt May is too proud to ask for help. And even though she really could have. But also, like, I understand you don't want your friends to feel like you're only using them for money. And Peter has a very strained relationship with Harry. So he's not going to go to Harry being like, hey, Harry, I can't pay my rent. Especially because there is this constant tension between Harry and Peter over the fact that Peter's still taking pictures of Spider-Man, the man that ruined Harry's life. And here we actually see some of the threads that were established in the first movie of Harry being jealous of the attention, air quotes, that Norman was giving Peter. Because Harry's convinced that Norman loved Peter more than him, which probably somewhat.
He kind of did.
Yeah.
Harry, like, changes a lot from the first movie kind of version. In this one, we see him as obsessed, especially around Spider-Man. He thinks that Spider-Man killed his dad, and we all know about his daddy issues. They continue on from the first movie. But he still truly respects Peter. He loves Aunt May. He still has a thing for Mary Jane. And it all kind of culminates when he figures out that, hey, Peter Parker's actually Spider-Man and my dad was the Green Goblin at the end of the movie. And he kind of tries to put two and two together. That being said, though, I still think it's within, like, Harry's personality to offer to help these people.
But Harry, honestly, also, here's the problem. Harry is on a one-track mind right now. He wants, at least when we see him at the beginning of the film, he has two things going on. Stuff at Oscorp. And stuff with Spider-Man. So he's not consciously aware of what's going on. Even Peter didn't know that Aunt May's house was being foreclosed on until he saw the foreclosure notice in the kitchen while she was passed out. But so yeah, Peter's life is an absolute shambles. Like, he's failing school, he has zero money, he can't even go to Aunt May for money, and she, like, gives him $20, and he's like, no, Aunt May, I can't take your money. She's like, take your money.
Mary Jane doesn't like him because she isn't showing, he isn't showing up to her terrible version of It's an Important to Being Earnest or whatever the play is.
I don't think it's a terrible play.
The play itself isn't terrible. It's just the setup for the play. Like, we see this play like maybe three times and it's always the same scene.
Well, of her talking to one of the other characters. But there, so Mary Jane's not really, it's not so much that he doesn't go see the play itself. It's the fact that he is the only one who hasn't seen it. Even her deadbeat crap father went to see it. Only then so he could ask her for money, but he went to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So Mary Jane and Peter basically are in this awkward state of Peter being a moron. I love Peter, but we still suffer from the fact that Peter doesn't know how to actually talk to girls. And my favorite part is actually at the end of this movie, where him and Mary Jane are chilling on the World Wide Web. They're chilling on the web, and he's like, oh, I can't be with you because you're going to be in constant danger. And I'm like, Peter, bubala. Both times, Mary Jane was put in danger, not actually because of Spider-Man, but because Peter Parker takes pictures of Spider-Man. Therefore, whether or not Mary Jane is dating you makes no difference. Her life has already been put in danger twice. At this point, what difference does it make if you actually get to be happy for 2 seconds?
Well, let's transition to Mary Jane then. Do we think she has a personality, or is she more the damsel in distress that some have accused her of in this movie?
Honestly, Mary Jane's entire personality is like, I want to be an actress, which is fine. But I don't know anything about her. Like, what does she care about? How does she view the world? She just like woke up one day and decided she was in love with Peter Parker or Spider-Man, take your pick. And then eventually she finds out at the end of this movie that they're one and the same. But she doesn't have that spice, that fire that Mary Jane has in the comics or in other adaptations.
Yeah, I think the problem I have with this love story, because this will get to another question I have, but the problem I have with kind of Mary Jane is that I don't know what the big draw is that they have all these guys constantly obsessed with her.
It's because she's a redhead.
Movies. I mean,
it's because she's a redhead.
Yeah, but
she's so pretty.
Feels like she has the personality of plywood, because
she's pretty.
Yeah, that's probably how she got her role in the play. But
hey. Oh, I will say that Kristen Dunst is doing a very good job with a very one-dimensional character. Maybe we can push to two-dimensional, like one and a half-dimensional character.
No, I honestly think she had more personality in the first movie, frankly.
Yeah, because we get the whole tension with her deadbeat dad, her desire to be an actress, her struggling. So that actually makes sense why she would kind of be drawn to Peter, because he's also struggling and they're having some of the same challenges that Harry doesn't have because he's, a rich kid.
Yeah, and I feel like we lost some of that nuance here in this movie, and we kind of just dumbed her down a little bit and made her like the center of this weird love box, because Harry's still in love with her too. There's one scene in this movie, and it kind of annoyed me, where they're at a party celebrating John Jameson's career as an astronaut, and Harry approaches Peter and basically yells and slaps at him, saying he says a lot of things, but one of the things he says is that you took Mary Jane from me. Meanwhile, Mary Jane is standing over there getting engaged to the astronaut.
And so, also, Mary Jane didn't dump him for Peter. She dumped him because he didn't defend her in front of Norman when he called her a gold digger.
Yeah, so it's like, why are you blaming Peter? Like, Peter's done a lot of crappy things. That's not one of them. Like, literally, the woman is over there dating somebody else. You can stew in your mutual, destruction that she's dating an astronaut. Who, by the way, I don't know how long they've been dating and how long they've known each other.
We don't even know how they met.
We know nothing. We know nothing about this relationship other than they're both pretty people. And he asks her to get engaged. She says yes. And for all I know, they've been dating for 3 weeks.
I don't think it's that. You could argue it's been at least a year, but it had to have been somewhere after the funeral of Norman Osborn, where Peter's like, I can't be with you because, okay, you could argue that after the first movie, he realized that his presence in Mary Jane's life could put him in danger. So he decides, oh, I can't do this. Fair, valid. But once it happens twice at this point, whether you keep your distance from her or not, she's going to get kidnapped anyway.
And then she ends up, she does end up leaving the astronaut at the altar at the end of the movie, doing this scene where she's running in her wedding dress to
It's a Peter, really pretty dress, though.
Pretty dress. Running to Peter's apartment and standing there and giving the cliched line. It's like, you're not safe with me. Well, that's my decision.
That's the other thing. I think other people have pointed this out, but the dialogue with Peter and MJ this movie, just, it's sort of like they're talking at each other, not with each other.
It sometimes feels like they're in completely different rooms. Like, they're just not connecting. But that leads to my next question. Is this just a really bad romantic comedy?
No. I mean, yes, it is a bad romantic comedy, but at the heart, this is not a romantic comedy. I think at the heart of it, this is a Doc Ock movie.
Ooh, that's a good point, because Doc Ock is once again the best part, the villain is the best part of this movie by far. He actually has an emotional arc. He loses something and then at the end of the day, like, regains to fight his humanity and ends up saving New York from himself.
Yep.
Like, he is really much a good chunk of this movie, heart and soul wise. That being said, though, I think the Peter stuff is a romantic comedy in nature. Like, you can remember in the beginning of the movie, they spend way too long on this scene with him fighting with a broom closet, trying to deliver pizzas. And it's just, that kind of sets the tone for all of Peter's nonsense. Like, how miserable his life is kind of comedic. Like, they get in a fight at the bank where Aunt May kicks the guy's foot.
God, Aunt May fighting for saving Spider-Man's life was so good. Props to the actress. I think she did some of her own stunts, if not all of them. And one, like, it was just so good. And the part where she's, like, holding on really tightly to the railing with the umbrella, and the umbrella just, she, like, can't hold on and just lands on the, like, railing, was so funny.
Oh, yeah. And then it's like, you have things like Peter getting slapped by Harry Osborn at this
twice.
Party. Twice. Any scene with him with J. Joe McPherson where he constantly gets fired and rehired. And it's like the only kind of, I feel like we have a couple of serious moments with Peter and emotional ones. One of them being on the train, and we can dissect that entire scene. But I feel like they leaned way more into the comedy with Peter in this movie, and because of the entire thing with, like, Mary Jane, I love you, no wait, I don't, it's too dangerous, as he gives up his powers and talks to the ghost of his uncle.
I will say that the film does, so we've talked about how, or I think we mentioned at the beginning, that, like, each of the Spider-Man franchises sort of borrows from different set of Spider-Man comics, right? So this trilogy borrows from the originals. Amazing Spider-Man also borrows from Amazing Spider-Man, and then the MCU Peter Parker is a little bit more Ultimate Spider-Man. But I love when films recreate comic book panels. And so the scene of Peter dumping the spider suit in the trash can and walking away was, I was like, I've seen that panel. I think that, I want to say that was a John Romita Sr. panel, but I could very well be wrong. But it's such a cool visual. This is the other part that doesn't quite get explained very well, which is Peter losing his powers.
I figured he was losing his powers because he was losing his confidence in himself as being Spider-Man. Like, this is such a metaphysical, like, weird argument, right? Because, like, if he got his powers from being a spider, then it doesn't matter how sad he is, he's not going to lose them. But if, like, his powers are tied to his mental health and his mental fortitude, and as his life just keeps getting worse and nothing works out for him, he just loses all of his powers. That being said, it gets really dumb when he regains them all because Mary Jane got kidnapped and there wouldn't be a movie anymore. She'd just be dead if he didn't regain them at that exact moment.
Well, There's something I had a note here about when Peter goes to see the doctor about his powers. And so he tries to talk to this doctor, and it just like it. Let's see, Peter. I think part of it is Peter having an existential crisis, right? Because it's not just about Spider-Man. It's also about Peter Parker and the fact that he's essentially losing himself to Spider-Man. Oh, there's so many parallels you could make to Bruce Wayne right now.
Oh,
oof,
yeah.
Oof, we're not going to go there, but we could. Let's see. Oh gosh, where did it go? I had a note here. I have so many notes on this movie. I'm just keep scrolling and scrolling. But either way, so he goes to see the doctor. The doctor gives him some like vague advice. And I'm like, Peter, you don't need like a GP. You need a therapist. Actually, everybody needs therapy in this movie.
Pretty much everybody needs therapy in this movie. And the doctor talks about this dream, and the doctor kind of helps sway him into not being Spider-Man anymore. And then there's like this weird like trend line about poetry that never really gets addressed in this movie.
So it does, but it doesn't. So it starts when Alfred Molina's Doc Ock tells him about his wife, who the soon-to-be dead wife. And I was like, I remember like watching, I was watching this and like, wait, I don't remember Doc Ock having a wife. And then
I
we get
didn't
to see
either.
The lab. I'm like, oh, that's why. Because she dies in a really, really weird death. She just like stands there as the glass is very slowly hurling towards her and does nothing. And it's not really clear if the glass is being hurled slowly because it's being pulled into the reaction or if we're just seeing it in slow motion. But I digress. So he tells them there's this like bit about how people with great minds have a responsibility to do good. And I'm like, said no, whatever. And he talks about how he met his wife because she's like an English literature professor, which makes it weird that she was in a lab coat, just like there at the thing, but whatever. And he was a scientist and how he was trying to explain the theory of relativity. She was trying to quote T.S. Eliot and they got confused. And basically, he tells Peter that the gist is like how to get a girl is to like tell her poetry. And I'm like, that does not work on every girl. This is not a universal concept. You quote poetry at me, I laugh in your face. Like that is, to me, quoting poetry at someone is the most cliche, unromantic, basic ass. Like it's so stupid and unnecessary. I'm sure it works for some girls. I am not one of them.
And it doesn't work on Mary Jane either when he tries it. So after he gives up being Peter Parker, he tries to get together with Mary Jane after she got engaged to the astronaut. And she
Which he knows.
And she rightfully calls him out on it. And I'm like, this is the best Mary Jane is in this movie when she's actually calling out Peter on his nonsense. Only for like a few scenes later for them to show up at a coffee shop. And I'm like, you know what? After what you said to me in that dark, dingy alley after you showed up to my play.
Well, hold on. There is some buildup to why she invites Peter out to coffee. It's really stupid, but it exists. Basically, Peter's life is like finally going up the up. He's given up his powers, blah, blah, blah. He's happy. And so he finally sees Mary Jane's play, yada, yada. So you have this scene where she's like, bro, I'm engaged. You're too late. Go away. So then MJ's like, oh, wait, being with Peter is a possibility now that it wasn't like literally 2 seconds ago. And meanwhile, John is like, hey, MJ, do you want to invite Peter? Because you said he was a friend. And she's like, nope, he's not a friend. He's just a jerk. And then she has this like weird moment. She's like, can I try something? And he's like, yeah, sure. And she tries to recreate that upside down kiss she had with Spider-Man. And I guess she doesn't feel the same fireworks, but John certainly did.
But my question, that it only works if she already knew that Peter was Spider-Man.
I think to some extent, well, she says later that she sort of always knew.
But there's no reason for her to be mad at him.
Well, there is still reason for her to be mad at him because A, she doesn't know for sure. And B, Peter Parker is still a flaky jerk. Because she was like, you can argue like she suspected, but couldn't ever prove it. So like, is he not? And there's plenty of evidence to convince her of both, essentially. So she invites Peter. It's sort of unclear exactly why she invites him over. to the coffee shop, because I felt like she was going to ask him about if he was Spider-Man at that point, or try to figure out what the heck is going on with him. And that's when everything goes to fan, and Doc Ock kidnaps Peter to get to Spider-Man so that he can kill Spider-Man for, or not kill Spider-Man, and deliver him to Harry, so Harry can give him the nuclear chemicals to recreate the thingy and make a bigger boom.
So that's my actual problem with that scene. So basically, Doc Ock goes to Harry for this chemical. Harry says he'll give Doc Ock the chemical if he brings him Peter Parker.
No, if he brings him Spider-Man.
Yes, but to get to Spider-Man, he needs to go to Peter Parker, who photographs Spider-Man. So Doc Ock's like, yes, I will bring you Spider-Man alive. In order to do that, I need to go talk to Peter Parker. To go talk to Peter Parker, I'm going to launch a car at him and kill him.
Well, in Otto's defense, he's not exactly in his right. Oh my god, I just realized every villain in this trilogy is basically not in control of his own actions, essentially, because they're all being manipulated by outside forces. Norman is being manipulated by the Gobulus Green and the Goblin. Otto's being manipulated by the Tentacles. And then next, we're going to see the same thing with Harry and with Eddie Brock.
Sandman is the one exception, I think.
Sandman is the one exception, because the sand does not corrupt his mind, but he actually has, like, yeah, it's, I can't with this trilogy anymore.
So basically the only reason that Peter is not dead is because he is Spider-Man. So like if like Doc Ock actually killed Peter Parker, then I guess that just ends everything.
I will say there are, to this film's credit, there are some really good moments of CGI and stunts and things like that. Like Peter jumping over the car that's about to hit him and breaks his bike. Peter grabbing MJ and sort of twisting and hurling them out of the way of the car because a Spidey sense goes off. Peter pushing Aunt May's chair out of the way as something else gets hurled. There's a lot of hurling of things into buildings in this movie.
Also, the entire action scene on the train is amazing. Like, that to me is one of the best parts of this movie, despite how silly that scene of them, like, saying that we won't tell a soul is. It still is like, you know what? New York loves their Spider-Man.
Like, what are you gonna tell? Oh yeah, by the way, we saw Spider-Man's face and he's just like white kid. Like, it's not like they know his name.
It does remind me of that. Okay, so like reference time. It does remind me of that scene in, like, I want to say the Justice League or Justice League Unlimited, where Lex Luthor takes over the body of Flash and he takes off Flash's mask and he's like, I have no idea who this is.
Finally, I will know the Flash's secret identity. It's just a ginger kid.
And it's like, that's what that scene reminds me of. But I think in that scene, Peter actually does want to know one of the people, and it's the neighbor kid who is helping Aunt May move.
Wait, was that the same kid?
I think that was the point.
I don't think that was the same kid.
It would have been amazing if it was. It should be. It's my head. Can't
I'm going to look it up.
Kid.
Hold on. I'm going to look it up.
If it isn't, the movie ruined an opportunity. Because basically, this kid actually has like a huge emotional connection despite having like two lines. And that's because like Aunt May gives this entire glorious speech about how the world needs its heroes. And that helps encourage Peter Parker to pick up being Spider-Man again.
Well, that also came from Aunt May, right?
Yeah, it came from Aunt May, but it's about this kid who absolutely adores Spider-Man and is wondering where he is. And she gets a little...
No! Are you ready for the answer?
Oh, yes.
It is not the same kid. The kids on the train are credited as Boy with Mask Number 1, played by Joe Paul Van Epp. And Boy with the Mask Number 2 is Weston Epp. The kid who played Henry Jackson is Jason Fury Ortiz. Sorry to be the party pooper.
There's an opportunity here. Anyway.
I also love the scene where Peter jumps over the car that was about to hit him, and there's like those two kids who are like, whoa, how'd you do that? And Peter's like, I exercise and eat my green vegetables. And the kid is like, my mom always always tells me that, but I've never believed her.
That is the funniest line in this movie by far. Yeah. Like, that's peak Peter Parker is actually being, like, funny Peter Parker. It's amazing. Rather than awkward guy.
Well, that's the other thing, right? All of the three Spider-Men are very different all of the different Peter Parkers are different. Their approach to Spider-Man is also very different. So, like, Peter is traditional Peter Parker. With, like, a little bit of snark, but not quite enough snark. And then when you get to Amazing Spider-Man, that's when you get the quippy Peter Parker we know and love.
I love that. Right? Oh, we'll get there soon.
We have at least one more shitty movie before we get to the next one, the Amazing Spider-Man duo.
So, that leads into my next question for you. Do you think this movie is the best of the Sam Raimi trilogy? And I know we haven't talked about the third movie, but we all know.
We all know it's not going to be the third one. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you'd asked me like 10 years ago, I would have said yes, hands down. But I think mostly it was because of Doc Ock. Because Otto was my favorite Spider-Man villain, even like back to the 90s series, because he was smart. He was funny. He had this relationship with Peter Parker that made this whole thing feel so much more personable in a way that he doesn't quite have, even with Norman Osborn. So for the sake of Alfred Molina's incredible performance, I want to say yes, but honestly, the first and second movie are kind of same bar. I will say, though, the CGI and action sequences are a little bit better in this movie, especially with the way they did the claws and everything, because the claws themselves are actually a practical effect. They just had people in green skin suits, green screen suits, not green skin suits, actually moving the tentacles and everything, which really helps add, it's like, it's so well done. So it's like a 1 point, it's like if I were to rate these movies at like a 3, the first Spider-Man movie is like out of 5, right? It's like a 3.5, and this one is like a 4, maybe like a 3.8.
See, I prefer the first one. I feel like there's like a little bit more nuance. Like, I forgot how good Norman Osborn is as Green Goblin. Like, that was just amazing. I feel like Mary Jane had slightly more character. I liked the dynamics between her, Peter, and Harry a lot more. And I liked the way that they kind of outlined the origin story with great power came with great responsibility. And then I watched this movie and I just feel like this is the same movie that I just watched, except I'm slightly more annoyed now.
Yeah, because that's fair.
Some of the humor is just not funny. Like,
but also some of the like plot elements are also, there's a lot of things that like you're told but isn't explained. Like, for example, there's this really powerful scene where Peter finally tells Aunt May about what happened that night, minus all of the spider stuff. And Aunt May just has this look on her face, and then she goes upstairs and shuts the door. And we never really get an explanation of what she's feeling or what the point of that was, because literally the next time we see her, she's like, oh, it's fine. It's water under the bridge. I'm like, but why is it water under the bridge now? But it wasn't 2 seconds ago.
And then she gives this really cliched speech about what it means to be a hero. And I'm like, this isn't something people normally do. And I'm like, that entire thing annoyed me. Mary Jane getting kidnapped 3 times and not having a personality annoyed me. Some of the humor just didn't, I felt like, hit as well. Like, Harry obsessed with being Spider-Man was, like, of course would make sense, but I think it weakened some of the aspects of his personality. Doc Ock and J. Jonah Jameson is, once again, the best parts of this movie.
There is also that weird dream sequence where Peter's talking to Uncle Ben that doesn't really do much, but is supposed to just like justify Peter's giving up his power. So that's fair, actually. Maybe you're right. Maybe the first one, I think in terms of structural and plot, I think you're right. I think the first one is better. So maybe it reversed what I said previously. Maybe the first one is like a 3.8 and this one's like a 3.5. There's still a few things that are redeemable about it.
Oh yeah. And it's like, I feel like they also still repeat things. Like, we got another, like, Peter goes into the building on fire scene and to rescue the kid. And I'm like...
Right, but the difference here is Peter goes in, not Spider-Man.
Which is interesting because earlier in the movie, he ignores people getting mugged. He ignores police cars. He feels guilty over it.
Well, the guilt finally reached a crucial point, even if we don't see it. And so him actually rescued, because if you remember, when he goes into the burning building last time, in the first movie, it was all a setup by Goblin, or partially. Mm-hmm. Here, he goes in and he actually manages to rescue a kid as Peter Parker, not as Spider-Man, but only to realize that there was actually still someone else trapped in there that couldn't get out. So it sort of cements the fact that Peter is Spider-Man. Spider-Man is not Peter. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, Peter's not just defined by Spider-Man.
I just wish they gave more context around why he lost his powers and why he regained them in the moment that he did. And I think that would have been, like, really helpful. I guess that's, like, his core emotional moment. And then, like the climax of that is not actually his battle with Doc Ock. It's the train scene where New York is like, we won't tell a soul that you and Peter Parker, you and are Spider-Man.
You're a random white child. Like, there's a great scene where one of the train passengers is like, oh my God, he's a kid. He looks just, he can't be older than my son. And that, to me, I think was really powerful.
Yeah, and then, like, Doc Ock's fight scene, that's the culmination of Doc Ock's emotional moment.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you know what I'm doing is crazy. I need to sink this thing into the river, which, by the way, I don't know if that actually turns it off or they just now have a sun at the bottom of the river.
Yeah, I actually have a note about that. Is it just that, like, the act of burying it under the water neutralizes its, like, bringing stuff in? Because they never actually explain why drowning it is going to save anybody or stop anybody.
No, it's just like, we're going to drown it. And I'm like, okay, fine. Whatever.
But you're right about some of the humor not landing. Like, there's a point where the society woman is introducing John Jameson and she calls him a delicious astronaut.
I'm like,
which was really cringe.
And then they had this thing where Mary Jane fails to say her lines in her play because Peter showed up. And it's so shocking that he actually showed up, that she fails being an actress for like 3 minutes. And we get like three people trying to prompt her. And I'm like, you would have been like kicked off the stage. There would be no next show for you. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, she was doing it, like, she's had a run that's been going on for months. So, but yeah. Actually, speaking of, like, there's a few more things. We still need to talk about J. Jonah Jameson in this movie.
We should.
But before we do that, I know last time we talked about some of the incredible actors that were in the previous movie that have gone on, you know, like Octavia Spencer, huge actress, and she's incredibly talented. We also have Bruce Campbell returning this time, not as the announcer, but as the snooty usher guy when Peter tries to see Mary Jane's play the first time. We have Emily Deschanel, who is the receptionist when Peter tries to deliver the pizza. She goes on to star in Bones. Daniel Gillies, I think it's how it's pronounced, who plays John Jameson, goes on to star in the Vampire Diaries franchise. Who else we got here? I think Donna Murphy, everybody knows, she played Roselle Octavius. Joe McHale is in this movie. Which is real. I'm trying to remember what. Oh, he plays the bank teller guy who tries to like pawn off some of the money that Ock is trying to steal, and not me, like, slaps his hand away. That was pretty funny.
Bonus points if you actually remember all these people in this movie.
No, I have the cast list up. I'm not that clever. You also have Dylan Baker as Kirk Connors. He starred and had a huge career, I think, even before this. Elizabeth Banks once again returns as Betty Brandt. Joey Diaz, who I think was in The Sopran, was in a bunch of stuff. Also huge actor. He's a Cuban American stand-up comedian. I have a couple more. Vanessa Ferlito, who was in, you know, Man of the House. She was in CSI, New York, and Graceland, and even NCIS New Orleans was in this movie. She plays Mary Jane's like co-star or whatever and friend. And then Daniel Day Kim is in this movie. He plays one of the scientists. Also incredible actor. He was in Hawaii Five-0. He was in Avatar The Last Airbender. He is, I think, will also be in that live action Avatar The Last Airbender. God help us all. Mm. And Asif Mandvi, I apologize for butchering that completely. He plays Mr. Aziz, the guy that fires Peter, also has been in like everything. So it amazed, like, it's always fun to me seeing actors before I knew them, essentially. Having these, like, what are really, like, arguably small roles, but end up now becoming more memorable.
Oh,
but
yeah.
let's talk about Triple J here, because there, I wish I could have seen the extended cut of Amazing Spider-Man 2 to see that hilarious scene of him putting on the Spidey suit and thwipping around to everybody, because they did film it and it's in the deleted scenes, but it didn't make it in the final cut of the movie. But it would have been so funny. So Peter dumps the suit, right? And then a garbage man played by Brent Briscoe brings JJ the suit that he then mounts on his wall. And we actually could see this, like, J.J. Jameson, A, has a soft spot for Peter Parker, because he does offer him the society dinner job thing. But he's also, like, actually having some mixed feelings about Spider-Man for, like, two whole seconds. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Seconds, he's like, oh, God, crime's up. I drove Spider-Man away. This is my fault. Even though none of us at any point had anything to do with JJJ. And he's like, you know, maybe Spider-Man was a good guy after all. And then 2 seconds later, Peter takes his own suit back and Jonah calls him a menace again.
It, which is amazing. Like, he, honestly, if any of the humor works, it's around JJ. Like, because he's like, constantly, like, his wife's on the phone bothering him in, like, every scene that he's in. And at one point, that does get a little old. But it's, like, his thing about, like, firing and unfiring Peter constantly is hilarious. And he's just, like, he's such a character. And I wish his son even, like, exhibited some of these, like, traits. And I'm like, you know what? This is awesome. Because he's just a little bit ridiculous in some ways. And he really is, like, this fantastic character that I wish we got more of.
I hope Peter doesn't tell him that he's dating his son's ex-fiance.
Could you imagine that conversation?
Oof, 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 oof. But speaking of things that, like, don't work in this movie, can we talk about the girl across the hall, the landlord's daughter?
Does she have a name?
Ursula, apparently. It's never stated in the movie.
Very Russian of them.
Yeah, so he has this scary Russian landlord for reasons I do not understand why he has to be Russian, but okay, because he lives in a kommunalka, so it makes sense.
I don't understand the point of this character at all. Like, it's clear that she has a crush on Peter throughout this entire movie, and Peter's too dumb to realize this, but then she also never says anything to him up until the point where she asks him if he wants cake.
Yeah, that's just so awkward, because there's like, hey, do you want cake? And Peter's like, yeah, sure. Cake sounds great. And she's like, do you want with a glass of milk? He goes, sure, with a glass of milk. And I'm like, Peter, you dumbass. But then we don't see them having a conversation. We just see him, like, her watching him as he finishes off the cake, and then she takes all of the stuff away. And I'm like, what is the point of this? But the point of this is, I think they have a scene. She shows up in the third movie based on I attempted to scrub Spider-Man 3 from my brain cells, but it did not completely work. So I guess she'll reappear.
The entire point of that cake scene is so that she can give him a note.
Even though I wonder if they just, like, needed a scene to pad it out, the film's timing a little bit, so they added her in. Because she could have just, like, handed him a note from his aunt, and
You did not need to pad this movie.
You really didn't. But gosh, Alfred Molina as Doc Ock is just so good. Like, I love the way. So Alfred Molina, for some reason, decided to do some things with his weight for this movie because he wanted Doc Ock to look like a 1950s, like, wrestler. And A, yes, that happened. Number two, God, he's just a really good actor. Like, everything I see him in, he's just so good.
Really good. I think, again, one of the best scenes, another good scene in this movie is the scene at the bank, though I find it hilarious that they just have bags of coins in the safe that they throw at each other, which is just...
That's not a realistic part of this movie. Hands down.
Like, I like, that wouldn't happen, but it's so comic booky, I'll just buy it. And it's so, like, nonsensical, and Peter and Aunt May just happened to be there at the exact same time at the exact same bank.
Well, New York only has the one bank. Didn't you know that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And
also, why did they go all the way to Manhattan to a to try to apply for a loan when they could have just gone to, in Queens or Brooklyn or wherever?
Well, it's the same reason. There's only one bank, and they didn't bring Harry to be a co-signer because that would have been dumb.
Yeah, well, we already talked about whether or not asking Harry for help.
Well, like I said, like, if people were just slightly less stubborn in this movie, no one would have any problems.
But we do at least see Peter trying to, like, advance, at the very least, his photography career, because the only thing JJ pays him for is the photographs of Spider-Man, because apparently he's the only photographer in New York that Spider-Man likes, and nobody ever finds this suspicious ever. But, you know, no, details, it's fine.
Not at all.
Fine.
Well, no, he pays him to go to a gala and take photos there.
Which he was bad at, because JJJ had to yell at him to get a photo of Mary Jane and, you know, the, like, exchange between, because they do the announcement, and Peter's like, oh, Mary Jane's engaged? Oh, no, I missed my chance. Let me try to get her back now when it's too late.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, I'm glad she's in this play now, achieving her dreams of being an actress.
Yay. Fired eventually, though, doesn't? Oh, no, she stars in a musical in the next movie. I don't know.
I don't. We will find out next time.
I'm legitimately terrified. I from what I remember of this movie, it's a mess, and it's cringy as hell, and I can only handle so much secondhand embarrassment.
So I have a funny story about the next movie, about how I watched it, but that we'll get into when we review the next movie. Like, the very first time I watched that movie was in the weirdest set of circumstances. But, like, for this movie, again, I haven't seen this one in 10 years. I watch it, I sit down there, I feel like I'm watching the same movie over again, but worse. Overall. And that leads to my next question, and possibly the last question. How much did you like this movie? The silence says all.
I don't know. Honestly, like, it's okay. It's not the worst superhero movie I've ever seen. That's still Thor, Love and Thunder. Yeah. Come at me, MCU stands. Come at me. But it's hard because we're judging a very early superhero movie by the standards of today. But that being said, we have other superhero movies of that period to judge it against. So villain-wise, I loved it. But is it, compared to, like, say, X2, it's not better than X2. And we already said it's not better than the first first Spider-Man movie. So it does a lot of things really well. It's an eh movie. It's okay. It's not winning awards, but it's far from the worst.
So, like, this movie, I feel like it's, again, a very 2000s movie. We're talking about something that came out in 2004. That's the same year we got Harry Potter 3. We got Van Helsing. We got National Treasure. Like, that's the era. Shrek 2 came out also that year. Catwoman came out that year, and this movie's better than Catwoman. So, take that for what it is. And, like, for that, I think Blade Trinity also came out that year. So it's like, it's coming out along with that same kind of style of superhero movies, and it's very much that. And I think, was I miserable watching that? No. Like, that's reserved for, like, Thor, Love and Thunder and Green Lantern and, like, the second Wonder Woman movie. Was I kind of bored? Yeah, a little bit. And I don't know if that's a worse crime than just being awful. If they did more nuance with the story and the characters and it didn't feel so jumbled, because that's what I felt like. I felt this movie was jumbled. I don't feel like there was, like, I felt like there was just scenes, and sometimes the scenes didn't really connect to each other. And I
it
just
almost felt a little bit like it was trying to be two separate movies. It was like the Doc Ock, Spider-Man, Peter losing his powers and getting his back stuff because he's so overwhelmed by being Spider-Man. And there's all this nonsense with Mary Jane and the love triangle and the romance. It's like you had one writer that wanted to write an action movie, another writer that wanted to write a romantic comedy, and they're like, oh, we'll just combine the two and it'll be fine.
And this is probably, like, we are really going to see this problem in the third Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Again, we'll judge how bad that movie is, because, again, it's been 1,000 years since I've seen it. But Spider-Man 2, I can see why it's some people's favorite movie. I will say that. Like, I won't, like, completely, like, this can't be anybody's favorite movie ever. It's not that, just not. It's not mine, because I'm not into the romantic comedy thing. I think the humor just doesn't hit all that well for me. And I
remember
just,
that
I
scene in the elevator.
Oh, that goes on too long.
It
basically
does go on too long.
Spider-Man loses his powers right on the rooftop, so he ends up having to get into the elevator in his costume with some other guy, and the other guy's like, cool Spider-Man costume, and this goes on for far too long.
Peter's like, yeah, it's a little itchy, like he could have just left it there, but no, he's like, and then it's just bunches in the crotch a little bit. I'm like, that, like, why would you just tell that to someone?
You wouldn't. Like, Peter's not that awkward of a human being. It's impossible. Like, no.
Impossible. Have you read Spider-Man comics? It's pretty much possible.
Yes, I have, but still, like, it, like, the secondhand embarrassment is there, and it's shooting at me, and I'm just like, this.
Look,
is
we
so...
are just one movie away from our beautiful, quippy Spider-Man, okay?
I'm so excited. You have no
but
idea, folks.
In order to get there, we have to suffer. We have to suffer greatly. Like, just to give you guys a preview, like, I haven't watched the third one, but I decided to read the summary of the plot on Wikipedia, and even
wait, you've
then,
never
I
never seen it?
No, I have seen. I've seen it maybe twice.
Oh, okay.
But it's also been like 15 years probably since I've seen mm-hmm. it. And okay, maybe not 15, but at least 10. So like I couldn't remember exactly. I remembered, you know, Harry and Hobgoblin. I remember the stupid venom poisoning stuff. I remember there was vaguely a Gwen Stacy, and I remembered Eddie Brock, because that was the first mm-hmm. live action Venom attempt. And I was like, okay, maybe there's something like I missed. Maybe I can like read the plot and it'll help me out. Reading it just made it worse.
Yeah. Like, it's not, but, like, we're not going to spend, like, time complaining about that movie in this movie. Oh, do you know what also came out in 2004? Hellboy.
Oh, wow. Okay, so, yeah, this movie was up against a lot of, this is, like, the beginnings of the like, wow. Okay, yeah, that's a lot of movies.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, I could see how it has its cultural place in the Spider-Man like context, and yeah, it can definitely be the best Spider-Man movie. It's, I just feel like there's more argument here than, let's say, if you watched Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, because it's obvious which one is the best one out of those three by far. It's Dark Knight, and if anyone wants to fight me on that one, I'll gladly take up the challenge.
I will. So there's one kind of last scene to kind of end this movie, because two things happen. One, Peter and MJ finally get together, whoop-de freaking do, and she says, go get him, Tiger, which is nice. That's the end of the movie. But there's one scene with Harry, because he doesn't end up killing Spider-Man. He does learn, we forgot to mention the fact that Harry does actually learn that Peter Parker is Spider-Man finally.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hears the voice of his father, which is actually not initially in the script. That was something because William Dafoe just happened to like come on set to say hi to people, and they're like, oh, this is great. And so he sees Norman, he hits the dagger he was going to murder Peter with. It breaks the glass, revealing this like hidden chamber, which looks really cool, actually, because it was like dusty. And then 2 seconds later, it's like not all dusty. And there's like a bunch of goblin bombs, pumpkin bombs and things like that. And they're everywhere. And I was like, when did Norman have time to make this?
How did he get in? Without smashing the... What? Anyway.
I'm sure it was like it rotated or it opened or something, and I guess the glass just shattered everything.
So yeah,
it's weird.
This movie sequel baits. And it sequel baits hard, and it will lead to some really dumb scenes in the third movie. But yes, basically everybody knows that who Peter Parker is in this movie, except Aunt May.
Poor Aunt May.
Poor Aunt May.
On that note, hopefully we will. I will do some research and we can figure out exactly where this the third movie went wrong. So if you're already so excited to hear our thoughts about the third one, here's our sequel bait. But do we forget anything?
I think we touched on all of it, really. Like, there's only so much you can it's a lot. It's a 2-hour movie. There a lot happens, but then a lot of it's also fluff. But yeah, I think we kind of touched on all the major components.
All right. In that case, ladies and gents and people of all ages and genders, if you are still with us and you've had your fun, please make sure to join us next time as we suffer through, so you don't have to, with Spider-Man 3.
Pray for us, folks. We're going to need it.